Prattville in Vrindavan, text number 11.
Ikshitaham
Rahito Api Asat Sato Swa Tejasa Pasta Tamo Bida
Brahma
Swamaya Yatman Rachitais Tat Ikshaya Pranaksha Dibi Sadaneshu Apiyate Ya ikshitaham raito pyasat sato Ya ikshitaham raito pyasat sato Swate jasa pasta tamo vidha brahma Swate jasa pasta tamo vidha brahma Swamaya yatman rachitais tadikshaya Swamaya yatman rachitais tadikshaya Pranaksha dibi sadaneshva piyate Pranaksha dibi sadaneshva piyate Ya ikshitaham rahito pyasat sato Swate jasa pasta tamo vidha brahma Swamaya yatman rachitais tadikshaya Pranaksha dibi sadaneshva piyate Who? Dikshita, the witness. Aham, false ego. Rahita, devoid of. Api, nevertheless. Asat sato, of material products and causes. Swatejasa, for his personal potency. Apasta, having dispelled. Tamma, the darkness of ignorance. Vida, the idea of being separate. Brahma, the bewilderment. Swamaya, by his material creative energy. Atman, within himself. Rachitai, by those who are produced. The living entities. Tat Ikshaya, by his glancing upon that Maya. Prana, by the vital airs. Aksha, the senses. Dibi, and intelligence. Sadaneshu, within the bodies of the living beings. Apiyate, his presence is surmised. Translation in purport, but follows the Srila Prabhupada. He is the witness of material cause and effect, yet he is always free from false identification with them. By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. The individual souls in this world who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life airs, senses, and intelligence. Translation responsibly. He is the witness of material cause and effect.
He is the witness of material cause and effect.
Yet he is always free from false identification with them.
Yet he is always free from false identification with them.
By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness.
By his internal potency, he dispels the darkness.
Of separation and confusion.
Of separation and confusion.
The individual souls in this world.
The individual souls in this world.
Who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy. Indirectly perceive him. In the activities of their life airs. Senses and intelligence. Purple. In this verse, Akrura establishes the all-powerful position of the Supreme Lord, whom he is about to see in Vrindavan. The false concept of separation from the Lord is described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11.2.37. Bayam dviti yapi ni veshata syat ishat apetasya vipayayo smriti. Although all existence emanates from the Absolute Truth, Krishna, we imagine a second thing, this material world, to be entirely separate from the Lord's existence. With this mentality, we try to exploit that second thing for our sense gratification. Thus, the psychological underpinning of material life is the illusion that this material world is somehow separate from God and therefore meant for our enjoyment. It is ironic that the impersonal philosophers, in their radical renunciation of this material world, claim it to be utterly false and totally separate from the Absolute. Unfortunately, the artificial attempt to divest this world of its divine nature, or in other words, its relation to God, does not lead people to utterly reject it, but rather to try and enjoy it. While it is true that this world is temporary and thus is in one sense illusory, the mechanism of illusion is a spiritual potency of the Supreme Lord. Realizing this, we should immediately desist from any attempt to exploit this world. Rather, we should recognize it as God's energy. We will actually give up our material desires only when we understand that this world belongs to God and is therefore not meant for our selfish gratification. The word apiyate here refers to a process of surmising the presence of the Lord through meditative introspection. This process is also described in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, 2.2.35. Bhagavan sava bhuteshu lakshita swatmana hari drishyair budhya dibir drashta lakshanair anuma pakai. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being, along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Akrura states that the Lord is free from the egotistic pride afflicting ordinary embodied souls. Yet the Lord appears to be embodied like everyone else, and therefore someone might object to the statement that he is free of egoism. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this puzzle as follows. How can we distinguish between being free of false ego and being afflicted by it? If a living entity is situated in a body, argues the objector, he will encounter the unhappiness and confusion that occur with it. Just as a person living in a house, whether he be attached to it or not, cannot avoid experiencing the darkness, warmth and cold that occur within it. This objection is answered as follows. By his internal potency, the Lord dispels the darkness of ignorance along with the separateness and bewilderment it produces. Omagyan timanandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshun militanye natasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Kamsa, in this pastime, is performing some service, which is rare, because normally demons do not like to serve Krishna. So he's doing service, but it's not that he thinks, or he doesn't think he is doing service, but actually he's doing a great service like that. So that is the mercy of Krishna, and that is especially the mercy of Krishna's devotees, that they make it their business to engage demons or demoniac personalities in the service of Krishna. That is the business of being here in the material world. Otherwise, why are we here in the material world? What's our reason for being here? Why do we stay here? Why do we bother to live here? Why do we stay in the material world? The only reason we stay in the material world for a devotee is to help the demoniac personalities take to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the devotee has no purpose to stay in the material world. What do we get from being here? Right? Hands up, how much, who's enjoying a lot, you know, being in the material world at this point in time? Right? If you weigh up the enjoyment and the suffering, which is greater? Suffering. Like that. That's the nature of the material world. Dukkhala yama shashvatam, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. As Burujan Prabhu says, it's like a stamped seal of approval. Right? Just like when you get something, it's stamped, authorized. Right? So the material world, Krishna authorizes it. Dukkhalayam, ashashvatam. Here, take it. Right? Suffer. Right? And enjoy temporary situations in this material world. Right? That's its nature. Right? You cannot avoid it. Right? Foolish to try and avoid it. Just like there are New Age philosophies going around, as we're discussing the last few days and with devotees in different classes. There's a New Age philosophy going around that if you just think positive, only good things will happen to you. Right? It sounds very good. Right? Just think positive and only good things will happen to you. Right? Their whole philosophy is that if you drive into the car park and you think there will be a parking space right in front of the front door of the shopping centre, it will be there if you just think positive. So spend your life looking for the perfect car parking spot. You know, if that's your desire, then so be it, right? But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is not guaranteed to be like that. You cannot guarantee you will always have happiness in the material world, right? Dukkhalayam. Krishna says, matra spashas tu kunteya, chitoshna sukha dukkha daha, right? Sukha and dukkha, happiness and distress will come and go, right? When you are born, according to your previous karma, your happiness and distress, the quota of your happiness and distress is already predestined, right, by your past activities in the previous lifetime. Right? So you're going to suffer and enjoy a certain amount. That's already predestined. And if you spend all your life just trying to counteract the suffering, you're just wasting your energy. And that's all the material world is about, just counteracting the suffering. Right? Let's do less and less and less and less. Well, let's make everything more and more convenient so we have to suffer less. Just like, hands up if you enjoy if you wash dishes for Krishna, right, it's very blissful, is it not? Yeah, it's very blissful if you wash dishes for Krishna. But if we look at it in a mundane perspective, if you're washing dishes, is that enjoyable? Right. It's not an enjoyable activity, right? So therefore, what do people do to make their life easier and better? They build dishwashing machines, right? And then we buy a dishwashing machine. So then we solve the unhappiness of having to wash dishes, right? So then you put your dishwashing machine in, you've solved the unhappiness, right? But then what happens is that you sit in front of the television, right? And you don't use your body, right? Because just like in India in Vedic times, right, people would wash their clothes by hand. Right, there's a purpose why when Krishna created the creation, when Lord Brahma created the creation, there's a reason why washing machines and dishwashers were not created. in the beginning. And what was the reason? So that you use your body, right? Because if you use your body, what happens? Right? Your body remains fit and supple, right? And it remains healthy, right? But what you do, you put all the dishes in the dishwasher, you put all the clothes in the washing machine, you go and sit in front of the television and get unhealthy, right? And then you create a whole lot of problems. Dukkhaliya. So where's the... You didn't deal with the unhappiness or the distress. It just came to you in a different way. Right? So Krishna says the nature of the material world is the distress and the happiness will find you. You don't have to worry about them. Right? Just like people, they think, if I go to Bali for a holiday, I'll be happy. Right? So I want happiness, so I'll go to Bali. Right? And then what happens? Someone puts marijuana in your boogie board bag. And now you're living in a jail there for the rest of your life. Right? But I was looking for happiness. I wasn't looking for that. I was thinking positively. Right? But it didn't turn out like that, did it? So that means there was a previous karma. Right? Or you went to Bali because you wanted to enjoy, and then you were just in the nightclub at 11 o'clock at night, and suddenly... Right? Huge bomb. Anyone see the pictures after that bomb in Bali? The bomb was in a car. There was a 3-meter crater under the car after that bomb went off. Such a powerful explosive. Even the bomb experts that came to analyze the whole thing and investigate the whole explosion and everything, the whole terrorist act, even they were amazed by how powerful that bomb was. But no one wanted that. Right? We were just drinking our tequilas and our, you know, alcohol and smoking our cigarettes and trying to pick up a girl or a boy. You know, we're just looking for happiness. No one was looking for distress. And then everything was suddenly changed in a flash, in an instant. So that is the nature of the material. Krishna says it is certified. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. So the nature of the demoniac persons in this world is that they are always trying to enjoy separate from Krishna. Right? They're trying to create a situation in this material world where they can be happy, separate from Krishna, but it's not possible. So therefore the devotees of Krishna, they make it their business to try to engage the demoniac persons and their demoniac propensities in the service of Krishna. Right? So the demoniac personalities, just like they went to the Royal Melbourne Show, right? What do they go to the Royal Melbourne Show for? Right? Sense gratification. Right? Fairy floss. Right, hot dogs and rides that make you feel sick. I remember recently, it was a couple of years ago, I think it was Moomba. Right? So I was with some devotees at Moomba, some of my friends, and they just took prasadam. You know, we were distributing prasadam, they just took prasadam, and then we were walking, I think, you know, I must have been serving a prasadam or something, and then we were starting to walk back to the car. We went past one of the rides, and one of my friends, he's a devotee, he said, I think you'll be listening to this. He'll listen to this in the next couple of days. So then he said, let's go on this ride. And I said, okay, let's go on that ride. So four of us gone on the ride, so we went on the ride, and I went, whoa, like that. And then he got off and he's like, right? And he had to sit down for half an hour. He couldn't even go and drive his car because he just felt like he was going to vomit. Like that. So I was saying to him, isn't it ironic? Huh? What do we get on the ride for? We didn't get on the ride to make ourselves vomit. We got on the ride to be happy. Yeah, that was the whole point. Right? We got on there to be happy. And were we happy when we got off? That's the material world, right? That's the nature of the material world. So therefore the devotees, they try to, the propensities that demoniac personalities have, we try to use those propensities in the service of Krishna. So therefore we go to the Royal Melbourne Show where everyone's just an illusion. And then if the fortunate souls, right? Krishna says in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Brahmanda, Brahmite, Kona, Bhagyavana Jeev. What is a Bhagyavana Jeev? Fortunate living entity, right? A fortunate living entity. Brahmanda Brahmite means the universe. The universe is just like a big Ferris wheel, right? It says within the Shastra, samsara chakra, right? It's just a wheel of birth and death. So sometimes you go up to the heavenly planets, And then after you've been up there, right, then you come down again. Right? Just like you get on the Ferris wheel, you go up to the top, it's far out, and then you start coming down again. Right? So that's the nature of the material world. Brahmande Brahmite, all the jivas are just transmigrating from one body to another, one planet to another, one species of life to another. And the devotees, they try to engage the propensity of the living entity to eat, to sleep, to mate and defend in the service of Krishna. So therefore, they go to the Royal Melbourne Show, for example, just to enjoy their senses. And what do the devotees do when they go there? Right? They try to engage that propensity to eat something. They want to eat something nice. But everything they eat there, which they think is nice, is just going to lead them to a lower species of life. Right? No good is done by any of that activity. Right? Sometimes Prabhupada was very forceful in his preaching. Right? One time Prabhupada said, he was giving a lecture, Prabhupada said, we are all good and you are all bad. Right? That's not the way we preach when we're at the loft. Right? You don't go out, you know, you don't go and give the Sunday feast lecture and you say, we are all good and you are all bad. Right? You can't preach like that. But Prabhupada was making that point. Right? Everything the materialists do is simply negative. Right? It's just leading them to a lower birth. So they'll go to the Royal Melbourne Show, for example, and they'll just try to eat all this food, and they'll try to enjoy themselves, but actually they're not doing any good for themselves whatsoever. Right? So therefore the devotees try to engage their propensity. Okay, you want to eat something nice? Eat this. Right? But the difference is that will elevate your consciousness to Vaikuntha. Right? You see the people after they eat prasadam, they become blissful. Right? They say, there's something in this food. What is the secret ingredient in this food which is making us so happy, so blissful? Right? And then we tell them the secret ingredient is Krishna's saliva. That's what it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Ancha Lila, he is saying, when he's taking Jagannath's prasadam in Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu says, it is just sugar and milk and grains and some spices. But when Krishna's saliva touches that offering, then the transformation and the tastes become transcendental. And there become subtle tastes and subtle experiences which are not like anything in this world. And you get the higher taste, and it's a fact. Just like we were in Jagannath Puri in 1994, and we're doing a parikram there before Gaur Panim, and we're having one program in one life member's house, and we're taking prasadam with Umapati Swami. Umapati Swami joined ISKCON in 1966 in New York. He's one of Prabhupada's first disciples. He's in, I think, the second initiation Prabhupada ever did. So we're speaking to Maharaj while we're taking prasadam, and we said to Maharaj, did you ever eat anything that Prabhupada himself cooked? Because in the early days, Prabhupada would cook the Sunday feast himself. So Umapati Swami said, yes, I ate things that Prabhupada cooked. And we said, what was it like? And he said, it was not from this world. Right? He said, I've never tasted anything since which was like it. Right? So that's the nature of Mahaprasad. Anything which is offered to Krishna becomes transcendentally transformed. And then if anyone eats that, it will change their demoniac propensity to go away from this material world. It will change their desires and purify their consciousness so they develop a desire to go back to Krishna. Just like a famous story which I've told many times, my best friend, Atul Krishna Prabhu, his father passed away about 10 years ago here in Melbourne. Right? His father passed away, he was about 66 or something like that. And he only ever came to this temple for 2 hours in his life. Right? He came when Atul Prabhu got initiated. Right? So he came here when he got initiated. Right? So 2 hours out of 66 years, what percentage is that? 0.00018367 42. So that is the percentage of his life. Right? 2 hours out of 66 years is nothing significant. Right? But when he was passing away, the whole family gathered around him. Right? They're a Catholic family, so they had many children. So Atul and his brothers and sisters were there, and there was maybe 8 brothers and sisters and the mother and that, and everyone was there, and everyone was very emotional, and the father was about to pass away. And in his final hours, he kept coming in and out of like a delirious kind of condition, like a coma. Well, he kept coming out of and then coming back to consciousness and then drifting away and coming back. Very common when people are passing away. So every time he came back, like in consciousness, he kept saying, stop those drums. Stop those drums. Put out that incense. Put out that, like that. So he was in the temple. Right? In his consciousness at the time of death, he was in the temple. 2 hours out of an entire 66 years. And at the time of death, he was in the, he was Krishna conscious. Right? And he started saying, you know, in his final moments before his leave, he started saying, stop that chanting. Stop that chanting. Like that. He was in the temple. That's how he passed away. Right? And then he you know, his head rocked back when he left his body and his mouth opened. Like that. And it says that if someone is sinful, the soul leaves through the anus. Yamarites, the Yamadutas, rip you out of the body through the anus. And if someone is pious, they leave through the mouth. Like that. So his mouth opened, so it showed that it was a pious death. Like that. So the devotees are trying to engage the demoniac propensities of people in the service of Krishna. Right? So in any way, in any shape, in any form that we give them Krishna, then that is a positive experience for them. Right? And there's many ways that we can give people Krishna. Right? We have prasadam distribution, distribution of the holy name, distribution of Prabhupada's books, many different type of public ceremonies we can do. Just like I remember when I was in Adelaide, 1998, and they had the Adelaide Festival, which is a world famous arts festival. It goes for 14 days. And one of the themes for the festival for that particular year was every night a wedding. So every night for the 14 nights of the festival, they had a different cultural wedding. Right? Mm-hmm. Different wedding. So they had a Scottish wedding, they had a Spanish flamingo wedding, they had a Hare Krishna wedding. They had, you know, all different types of weddings. Like that. By the end of the 14 nights, they were starting to get a bit desperate. The last three or four are very strange. Really weird. They had an Elvis wedding, right, and a gay wedding. And the final wedding is really getting very weird because I'm running out of ideas, I think, like that. So they rang us up at the temple and they said, oh, you know, we want to have this wedding. And they said, is there anyone there who can, you know, do it? And I said, well, actually, me and my wife are getting married. Or me and my... the girl I'm going to marry, they're getting married. So I said, yeah, we're getting married. And they said, oh, great. You know, can you have the wedding as part of the festival? And I said, well, we can't. You know, we're going to go back to Melbourne where our families are. But then I said, we can have a duplicate wedding. So out of the 14, I think about three of them were actual weddings and the rest of them were just, you know, duplications. So we duplicated what we did in our marriage, then we did it again in the Adelaide Festival. So then, the night of the festival, we had our wedding, right? And about half an hour before because we were the third wedding of the festival or something. So we were going down every night to check out the other weddings to see, you know, are we going to be like up to the standard? So we went down the first couple of nights, and the first night was, I think, the Scottish wedding, you know, and they had like the whole bagpipes, and you know, they had like swords, you know, like a sword. Yeah. Line of people, you know, and the bride and groom walked through all this, so it was really far out, you know, it was very good. And they had the Spanish flamingo wedding, and he rides in on a black stallion, you know, he jumps off a black stallion. Like, this guy's like a flamingo dancer, he was hardcore, it was real, you know. It was far out, it was like Zorro, you know, he rides in, you know, and the horse jumps up, and then he jumps off the horse, and he was into it, you know, he was good. So we were thinking, like, wow, you know, we're going to have to put something good on, you know. So about half an hour before the wedding started, I kind of looked, because we were in like the change rooms on the other side of the park, and then we had to come, and I looked over and there was only about 10 or 20 people there. And I thought, oh great, you know, we're going to do all this work and there's only 10 or 20 people going to turn up. So it's like, you know, it's like the whole thing's a flop. So then we went back in, we got ready, put on our clothes and everything and got ready. And then by the time I came out, there's 400 people there, you know, waiting for the wedding. I thought, whoa, you know, I started getting nervous, you know. So then we went there and we did a Harinam across the park, you know, and they were watching us like coming over, oh, here comes the Haris, you know, doing the Harinam across the park. And then we got there and then we asked everyone to come and sit close because everyone was sitting back. Everyone was feeling a bit uncomfortable. So we asked them all to come very close. Everyone came very close. And then we did the whole wedding. And, you know, Vedic weddings, they're very far out. You know, you tie the knot, and then you put the garlands around the hands and you pour the conch shell water over. And it's a very far out wedding. Doing the seven steps and all the different things we do. So at the end of it, the crowd were getting really enthusiastic. And then we had the fire jugger. So we had the fire jugger, and then we all started doing swaha, and they're throwing the grains in, you know. And Vijay Prabhu was chanting all the mantras, and they're chanting the mantra. Like, they're getting right into it. You could see them all, right? They're like, you know, om, om, apavitra, you know, like, om, agyana, agyana, timur, and like, they're getting into it. You know, hundreds of people throwing the grains in and swaha, throwing it right in. And everyone's just getting more and more, like, enthusiastic. And then at the end of the wedding, then we all start circumambulating the fire. So everyone starts circumambulating the fire, and Bhakta's leading the kirtan, and just started getting, it was really ecstatic kirtan. So everyone's getting around the fire, and they're all chanting, and they're all getting right into it. And then, you know, you give out the black dot. You take the ash from the fire, and you get out the black dot. You know, you put it on everyone's forehead, or it comes to the jugya. So, you know, me and Beta Priya are standing there with the black soot, and then we're going to put it on everyone's head. No one was coming. So Bhakta says in the microphone, he says, come and get your black dot. So then they're all lining up, you know, like 150 people lining up, right? They're black dot, and they're all walking up. As they're all walking up, they're all walking up going. And they were putting the black dots on, they're all like, you know, like this. They're getting right, you can see they're getting purified. The subtle body was getting purified. So the point is that in this material world, everyone's going to have demoniac propensities for so many different things. For example, they're going to go to many, many demoniac weddings, right? And all the weddings they attend basically in their life are actually going to lead their consciousness down to hellish planets. Yeah, because you go to the weddings, you know, it's based on sense gratification, the vows are based on sense gratification, right? And then the food that you eat afterwards is based on sense gratification, the wine that you drink is based on sense, so it all leads you down. But this particular wedding, you know, if they come to a devotee's wedding, that demoniac propensity to go to a wedding, right, or the propensity to go to a wedding, instead of making it demoniac, it becomes transcendental. It becomes a purifying activity. So devotees, then we have to try in every way we can to get into material society on every level, in every way we can, try to engage people and their demoniac propensities in Krishna's service. And in this way, by doing that, that uplifts their consciousness. And that's the purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. So here, Kamsa is doing the same thing. Kamsa does not realize that he's doing devotional service, but actually he's doing devotional service. He's doing bhakti, right? He sent Akrura to Vrindavan to get Krishna and Balaram. So he's facilitating a devotee to go and see Krishna, right? So that's devotional service, right? If you facilitate anyone, if you facilitate another devotee or a conditioned soul, right, a non-devotee, to come closer to Krishna, that's bhakti, that's devotional service, right? You're doing a service to that personality. So Kamsa was doing this service to Akrura, and Akrura was in ecstasy. He was getting the opportunity to go and see Krishna and Balaram directly. So this was a great benediction. Right? So this is the benediction of Krishna and the benediction of Krishna's devotees. They try to engage everyone in the material world in devotional service. Now, it is described that in the Satya Yuga, the demons and the devotees were born on different planets. Just like we see in the Mahabharata and so forth, it's mentioned, and in the Bhagavatam it's mentioned, that the demons used to go to the heavenly planets to attack. Right? So the demons are on one planet, the devotees are on another planet. And sometimes the demons would attack the heavenly planets, and sometimes they'd overrun the heavenly planets. They'd take Indra's throne and so forth. Most of the time when they attack, the demigods defeat them, but sometimes they win. So in Satya Yuga, they're born on the different planets. And then in Treta Yuga, it is said they're born in different countries. Just like you see in Lord Ram's pastimes. And the Ramayana. The Ramayana is in Treta Yuga. Lord Ram appears in Treta Yuga. So devotees are living on one country, and Ravana and the Rakshasas are living in another country, right, separated by the ocean. Right, so everyone is separated. And then Dwapara Yuga, everyone is in different families. Right, just like you see the Pandavas and the Kauravas, right, two different families. Demons in one family, devotees in one family. And then in Kali Yuga, it's in the same body. Right, the demon and the devotee take birth. And it's mentioned that before Lord Brahma created the material world, he performed tapasya, or austerity. And Prabhupada points out that Prabhupada makes some very amazing comments in that section of the ninth chapter of the second canto. Prabhupada says that if one wants a comfortable life and wants to become spiritually advanced simultaneously, it's not possible. Right? You can't have a comfortable material life and expect to be a spiritually advanced devotee. Right? You can have one or the other. You can be comfortable materially, right? Or you can make spiritual advancement. Right? Which means you have to perform tapasya. Right? So if you want to purify your consciousness, then you have to perform tapasya. You have to sacrifice yourself for Krishna. Right? And it has to be intense. Right? There's no easy ride back to Godhead. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's spiritual master, expected all of his disciples to go back to Godhead in one lifetime. Right? That is the expectation. We should go back to Godhead at the end of this lifetime. But if you're going to go back at the end of this lifetime, are you going to do it by being slack? Right? Or by being spaced out? Right? Or by being lazy? Or by being unmotivated? No, you won't get back to Godhead in this lifetime. You can get back to Godhead in this lifetime, but you have to become very intense in your devotional service. It means you have to surrender to Krishna like anything. Right? It really means you have to give everything to Krishna. Right? Mind, body, and words. You have to give them to Krishna. Right? Intensely. Right? I was listening to some lectures recently by my spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he was speaking about all his memories of Srila Prabhupada. And he was speaking especially about the very early days of ISKCON. And when Prabhupada first went to India in 1970, Prabhupada came in 65, came to America. Right? 67, he became ill, and he went back to Vrindavan for several months. Then he came back again, then the movement really began to take off from 67, 68, 69, 1970. And then in 1970, Prabhupada went to India, back to India with his disciples. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was speaking about what it was like between 70 and 74. He was the GBC in India, and he was directly associating with Prabhupada. He's Prabhupada's secretary for about 9 months of the year, 9 months directly of Prabhupada's association between 70 and 74. And he was saying how intense it was. Like, it was intense. And when you hear it, you realise the kind of devotional service we're doing here and now is quite comfortable. Right? And even, you know, I would consider the Melbourne temple, Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, to be a lot more intense than, I'd say, most temples in ISKCON. Right? It's quite an intense temple to be in. And personally, I wouldn't be in any other temple. Because intensity is good. It's a very intense temple. But if you look at it compared to what they're doing in 1970 in India, it's not very intense. That was intense. Right, they had no facility. Right, no facility. Right? And Prabhupada was just Tamal Krishna Maharaj got married. And then he got married. He said that Prabhupada never made any consideration for his grihastha ashram. Mm-hmm. You know, when we get married, then we want our own house, then we want our own room, and then you want your own, you know, like that. And that's why you get married, to have a little bit of material facility. Prabhupada never said to him, you know, are you comfortable? Do you have enough money? Like, there was no consideration. You're married, serve Krishna. Right? It was very intense. That was the mood. Right? And as Tamal Krishna Maharaj pointed out, that was purifying. Right? That is tapasya, tapo divyam. Right? You have to perform transcendental austerity on behalf of Krishna to purify your consciousness. Right? You cannot become pure in Krishna consciousness, so you cannot expect to purify your consciousness unless you perform austerity on behalf of Krishna. So that is the methodology. Right? That is how we purify the demoniac nature, or the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, by performing devotional service in a very austere and a very surrendered mood. That should be the mood of the devotees. We want to do more service for Krishna. Not that we want to do less service for Krishna. That's not the mood of the devotees. Right? Just like now is Kartik. So Kartik is the most auspicious month for performing bhakti. Out of any of the 12 months of the year, it is the most auspicious time in the year to perform bhakti. Right? So in the month of Kartik, the devotees want to increase their service to Krishna, right? Especially their hearing and chanting. That's the mood. Right? Devotees don't want to decrease. Right? But that's not the mood of advancement or purification. The mood of surrender for devotees that we want to continuously go more and more forward towards Krishna. So Kamsa is doing a great service for Akrura by sending him to Vrindavan to meet Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates, right? If we serve Krishna, even though we have demoniac tendencies within our consciousness, within our heart, you know, we have this desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, but if we sincerely serve Krishna, and even intensely serve Krishna, Krishna will destroy those demoniac propensities. Just like how did Krishna reciprocate with Kamsa for doing his service to Akrura? What did he do?
He goes to see him.
Yeah, he goes to see him in a very special kind of way. Right? He goes to Mathura, walks into Mathura, and Kamsa puts Kuvalaya Peed on the front gate of the arena. He builds a wrestling arena, right? And he puts Kuvalaya Peed on the front gate. You have to understand, Kuvalaya Peed is the elephant. He's not an ordinary elephant, right? Kuvalaya Peed was the property of Jarasandha, who Krishna killed later on. Krishna killed Jarasandha later on. Kuvalaya Peed was owned by Jarasandha. And Jarasandha was travelling around India, because Jarasandha was very powerful, he was travelling around India conquering different kings. And then when he got to Mathura, he set up a camp outside of Mathura. And then he sent Kuvalaya Peed into, like, towards Mathura to begin to destroy things, right? He was so powerful. And Jarasandha caught Kuvalaya Peed, he captured him earlier by using 10,000 other elephants. He had to take 10,000 elephants to surround him and contain him and control him. That's how powerful Kuvalaya Peed is. This elephant was as strong as 10,000 any other elephants. So when Jarasandha got to Mathura, he sent Kuvalaya Peed into Mathura to start to cause some havoc and try to overrun Mathura, try to conquer Mathura. So Kamsa came out and he saw Kuvalaya Peed, the elephant, coming. And Kuvalaya Peed charged Kamsa. And Kamsa grabbed him
and picked him up
and threw him back to Jarasandha's camp. And Kuvalaya Peed crashed into Jarasandha's camp. Right? And then Jarasandha thought, you know, maybe we shouldn't attack Mathura. Yeah, this guy's obviously not ordinary. So Jarasandha went and met Kamsa, and he made a pact. They made a union. They made a, how do you call it?
Alliance.
Yeah. They made an alliance together. And then Jarasandha, who was a bit older, he gave Kamsa his two daughters, and that's how the alliance was made. If you want to make an alliance with another king, you give your daughters in charity quite often, and then you'd become family, so then they can't kill you. Yeah, so that's how they do it. So he put Kuvalaya Peed on the front gate. So Krishna killed Kuvalaya Peed, right? And then he broke off his tusks, right? And then he put one of his tusks on his shoulder, right? And then he walked into the wrestling arena, right, with Kuvalaya Peed's tusk on his shoulder. Right? That's what I've just done to your elephant. Strong as 10,000 elephants. Yeah, just throw the tusk on the ground. So next there was Chanura and Mushtik. Right? Chanura and Mushtik were actually Brahmanas. They were born in Brahmana families. But then they were demoniac. And they used to spend all day wrestling. They were very powerful. Like very powerful demons. And they used to spend all day wrestling. And then Kamsa wanted to control them as well. So he went to them one time. And he said, would you like to engage in a wrestling match? And Chanura and Mushtik said, yes, we would love to wrestle with you. So Kamsa got them and just, you know, rolled them up and pinned them on the ground. And he said, do you surrender to me? And they said, yes, we'll be your followers, like that. So if someone was superior, if it was a superior Kshatriya or a superior Brahmana, then you would surrender to that person. You become their disciple or their follower. So Chanura and Mushtik were very powerful. So Krishna and Balaram came in, they smashed those two right in front of Kamsa. And these two were very, very powerful demons, very powerful wrestlers. And they got both of them and they just killed them right in front of Kamsa. And then Krishna looked at Kamsa, right? And he just jumped up onto the his dais, up onto his throne, and he grabbed him, right? And then he took him back down to the wrestling arena, back where, you know, all the wrestling was supposed to take place. And in front of the whole kingdom, right? He just got him, just pounded him on the ground, just smacked him until he was dead. That was his reciprocation, right? Because he did devotional service to Akrura, right? And because he'd done something favourable towards Krishna, he'd done something favourable towards one of Krishna's devotees. So this is the way Krishna reciprocates, right? Especially if he's defective. If he sees that we're trying to serve him sincerely, then he will destroy our demoniac qualities, right? He'll remove the demoniac qualities, right? So that's the way Krishna reciprocated with Kamsa. He destroyed the demoniac propensity. And then Kamsa at the time of death, what was he thinking? Right? He was thinking, I should have surrendered to this guy long ago. You know, I shouldn't have given him so much trouble. I shouldn't have kept sending all these demons. Right? He became remorseful at the time of death, and he thought, you know, what a fool I was. Right? How was I thinking I could defeat this person? And Krishna was only 10 years old at the time. He was just like a young man. You know, he's rolled up in the Mathura. He's just a young man. He's walked in, right, and he's just killed everyone. Right? And then he kills Kamsa, the king, right in front of everyone. Right? So this is Krishna's desire. Krishna wants to purify us of our material desires and inebrities. But he can only do it if we are sincere. And even if we want to remove our material desires, if we're sincerely trying to remove our material desires, but we can't on our own, right? But if we sincerely, continuously pray to Krishna, and especially to Lord Nisringadev, right? If we pray to Lord Nisringadev, who is Krishna's anger personified, right? If we pray to Lord Nisringadev, we pray to Krishna, I'm trying to give up my demoniac qualities, but I'm finding it very difficult. I sincerely do want to become your devotee. Then they will rip them apart. Lord Nisringadev will just rip all the demoniac qualities apart. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Henry Ford's grandson, who loved him, and he did come to his devotee.
What's that?
Henry Ford's grandson.
And Baruch Prabhu. He's saying that there are rich devotees within ISKCON, like Ambarish Prabhu, who was Henry Ford's grandson. He may live comfortably, but we have to understand he's a multi millionaire, right? But he doesn't live extravagantly. He just donated $10 million to Mayapur to build the Adbhut Mandir. He's determined to build the Adbhut Mandir, the great temple, which was predicted by Nityananda Prabhu and so forth. It hasn't started yet, but we're trying to start it. It's very difficult to start it because in Bengal is still a communist state, so no one's allowed to own more than a certain quota of land. So what we've done in Mayapur, Prabhupada brought the original land, like, which, you know, is where our Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir is, where the complex is at the moment. We brought the original land. And what we've done over the years, we've brought nearly all the land all the way around it too. Like when you look at all the way out to the trees right out the back and all the side, we own all that land. But because no one entity or one society can own too much in Bengal because it's communistic still, then we put all the different lands under different trusts. You know, we said this one's the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust and this one's ISKCON and this one's, you know, the Gurukul and this one's the Goshala. So we put it all on, but the government know what we're doing. They know that it's just ISKCON, but we're just saying, oh no, you know, they own that and they own that and they own that. So what we're trying to do is get permission of the government to build the big temple on the land, which is kind of a bit further out from that land, but the government aren't giving permission because they're saying, you know, you own too much land, it's not communistic. So what we may have to do, what the latest proposal by the GBC is that we may have to build it on the original land that Prabhupada got, which means down the front of the property, where the front of the, like in the, where the fountain is and where the park is and so forth, in that place we have to build a big temple there. So they're thinking they may do that in the next few years. So it should start in the next few years. That's what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can be rich in Krishna consciousness, but you see the example of the great kings in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like Ambarish, like Yudhishthira, like that. They had opulence because they were born with that. Like Ambarish Prabhu is, you know, is Henry Ford's grandson. Like he has more money than what we could even imagine. So he's born in that situation. So he's not going to live like on the street or something, or, you know. But he lives very simply. He doesn't live in opulence. He's not like, you know, just a sense gratifier. He's living very simply. Yeah. Now, that's the same with, if you look at Ambarish, or if you look at
Yudhishthira, or if you look at Parikshit, you know, they were powerful kings, but they didn't enjoy their opulence. They weren't just, you know, taken away by the opulence. They were kings, so they possessed all those things, but they used it all in Krishna's service.
Any other questions?
When the Guru were
ascending
to the
because when you look at him, he looks like a human.
Two hands.
Yeah, two arms. Two. Lord Narayan has four arms. Because Lord Narayan is the Lord of Vaikuntha. Yeah, so it's just being written like that. His form, what Brahma says, his form is Sat-Chit Ananda Vigraha. So his form is eternal. Now means Krishna's pastimes are prakata and aprakata. So prakata means sometimes they're manifest, sometimes they're seen on earth, and aprakata means most of the time they're unmanifest, like that. So it means now he's assumed, just means now he's manifest, and now he's showing that eternal form. It's not that the eternal form didn't exist before Krishna appeared.
But he's always like that. He doesn't change
anything. Yeah, he always looks like that. That's what he looks like.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. When you go to the spiritual world, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen all the pictures, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the form is manifest and sometimes it's unmanifest. Sometimes you can see it on earth, but other times you can't. Most of the time you can't see it on earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Any other question? Comment?
I have one comment. I was reading Leelamrita, the sixth volume, and Prabhupada was telling how Adhikeshwar Swami, yeah? Adhikeshwar Swami, he had to fight a case in the court. The Prabhupada said, take all the books and put on, don't go in the suit. Share your hat, put your kilam, and tell me, tell you all the evidences, what we have presented in the book. And then you will definitely win. And then when the case finished, 2 weeks after, Damakrishna Maharaj came and he told Prabhupada that we have won the case. So that enormous faith Prabhupada had to preach throughout the whole world. And he showed how to win the case. So what I am saying is that you have to have very strong faith in Krishna. He can do anything. And he did one. Prabhupada said, there you are.
Yeah, that's significant, that pastime, like that in New York, because the court was taking us to, this, like the courts within America were trying to work out whether the Hare Krishna movement was a cult or an authorised religion.
Definitely.
And if we were a cult, then they wouldn't have given us permission to, you know, to practice within America so easily. And then Prabhupada said, as you said, then on the evidence of the book, on the ancient Vedic literatures, prove that we're an authorised religion, we're an ancient religion. And that's what the devotees did, and they won the court case. The judge recognised, yes, this is an authorised religion based on Prabhupada's books being so authorised, like, and describing an ancient culture. And then we won it, and therefore we were had the right to practice religion within America and so forth.
The Maharaj Goswami wrote the Times of India whole paper, and he showed it to Prabhupada, he read the whole thing, and Prabhupada was so happy. How my devotees are fighting for Krishna. Krishna says this. That's not your key people. That's all I mentioned.
Yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada.